Hello there. Today is Wednesday, October 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Democratic-led impeachment hearings take a pivotal turn today with publicly televised hearings as President Trump is said to be raging.
I think the combination of the technology on the one hand and Trump's personality on the other means that we should probably expect a Category 5 tweet storm.
This is President Trump welcomes a controversial world leader to the White House today. Also ahead, the Supreme Court takes on a case that could impact hundreds of thousands of young immigrants brought to the U.S. as children. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, the impeachment inquiry into U.S. President Donald Trump will not be allowed to become a venue for, quote, sham investigations into Democratic presidential hopeful Joe Biden and his son. That's the word from Representative Adam Schiff, the Democratic chairman of the House of Representatives Intelligence Committee, who is heading the congressional probe. Schiff's comment in a note to committee members suggested he would not allow Republicans to call Biden's son Hunter and the whistleblower who triggered the impeachment probe after a Trump phone call with Ukraine's leader as witnesses. As leader of the Democratic majority on the intelligence panel, Schiff controls which witnesses testify. Schiff, who is spearheading the investigation into whether Trump pressured Ukraine to target one of the president's domestic political rivals, also said he would not allow the hearings to be derailed by a debunked conspiracy theory that Ukraine, not Russia, interfered in the 2016 U.S. election. President has made the vow as or he made the vow as the White House and Republican allies in Congress set up lines in defense ahead of the televised public hearings that begin later today. Trump Tuesday continued to call the investigation and impeachment inquiry a witch hunt.
What they do is they go all over Washington. Let's find the 10 people that hate President Trump the most and let's put them up there.
Well, joining us now to talk more about it, VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. Catherine, how much of a turning point could these televised hearings be?
Well, this is the turning point right here, without a doubt. The Democrats have given themselves a very shortened timeline. They have about 2 weeks before they go on this Thanksgiving recess when they leave Washington, D.C. They've given themselves only a handful of days to be able to conduct these public open hearings and make their case to the American people really for the first time. Because, as we know, they had those closed hearings. Democrats did come out to the mics and cameras to talk, but hearing from those witnesses firsthand is a completely different thing. Impeachments hold a really important place in the American public's mind and imagination. A lot of older people, older generations, can remember the Nixon impeachments. And now that's happening in this generation and in this moment. And what people take away from those hearings is how they will decide whether or not President Trump should be removed from office. So Democrats really are looking for that one moment that will sum everything up and make the case that Trump was wrong here, that he did violate the office of the presidency.
So what I'm hearing from you is that public opinion will potentially determine the next phase of this when this goes to the Senate for an actual trial, and how willing Republicans are to continue to defend the president, stand behind him, and make the case that he did nothing wrong.
There's that, and then there's the step even before that, which is when the U.S. House of Representatives votes on articles of impeachment. Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, has always said that this is a process that isn't up to her to lead. It's her in this moment. The times have found them in this crisis situation, and she will learn from the public and listen to the American public as they hear and get through this process together and learn what the president did. She is not going to hold a House floor vote unless she thinks she has an ironclad case to take to the American people.
So if that does happen, then the House votes to impeach this president, then it goes to the Senate, where the Republicans still hold the majority. And as of this point, it doesn't seem like there is anyone willing to come out and say they're even open to the idea of impeaching the president and removing him.
Right. And you have to also consider that we're having an extraordinary moment in the sense that we're having an impeachment going into a U.S. presidential election. That's something that's never happened in this country before. So you take all of the complicated politics of impeachment and add them to the politics of an election. And you have several senators who are running for president. You have Republicans who are looking for re-election. You have a whole turning point in terms of all of the politics of the nation. It's going to be a really difficult case for Republicans to make to turn on the president from their own party headed into a presidential election.
So far, it doesn't seem like they're really going after what the president has done and the evidence that we've already seen from all these witnesses who've corroborated what the whistleblower said, but rather they're going after the process itself. Is that going to hold up?
Well, right. And it's going to be a harder case to make once you have those witnesses talking in public and kind of building this story, building this case as they're testifying. What Republicans have said is that they want to hear from the whistleblower. Lindsey Graham was on the Sunday talk shows this weekend saying that if the whistleblower doesn't testify, then that case is dead in the U.S. Senate. Now, that's going to be a really tough sell because of the whistleblower protections, because Democrats are saying that he or she should not have to come out and testify. That's part of the whistleblower process.
And all the people that have testified apparently actually knew more than the whistleblower. The whistleblower was secondhand to some degree about the president's initial conversation or the conversation that we've heard about with the Ukrainian president, whereas all of these other people that have testified, like the ambassador to Ukraine, you know, these people had firsthand knowledge. So that would seem even more relevant and credible.
Right. And that's the argument that House Democrats are making, is that we've really gone beyond the whistleblower allegation at this point. Obviously, that's what started all of this, but now we're hearing from people who are actually on that call and who are saying that there was a quid pro quo between President Trump and the Ukrainian President Zelensky, and that there really is no need for the whistleblower to testify because we know so much more. We have a much broader picture of how the U.S. foreign policy changed in regards to Ukraine because of the president's domestic political considerations.
What do you think it would take for Republicans to not continue to support the president in this process?
Well, I think we had an interesting taste of that earlier this year when the president withdrew U.S. troops from Syria. And you actually, for once, did see this coalescing of Republican opinion around the idea that the president had made the wrong decision and that it was a dangerous decision. That, combined with the politics of impeachment, really made for a unique crisis point for President Trump in the sense that he really had to defend himself to his own party. If he were to do something like that again, if public opinion were to really take a nosedive against him, not in his favor, if there was a political calculation where Republicans thought that Mike Pence would be more useful for them headed as the nominee into the 2020 election, then you might see a change. Then you might see the U.S. Senate flip against President Donald Trump.
All right. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson, we appreciate your perspective. The witnesses this week will be U.S. diplomats who voiced concern over Trump's asking Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden and his son Hunter. The U.S. Supreme Court took on a case yesterday, Tuesday, that could impact the future of hundreds of thousands of people brought to the United States as children illegally. Immigrants known as Dreamers and senior Democrats rallied behind the Obama-era Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program Tuesday as the U.S. Supreme Court considered whether to let President Trump end it.
My children deserve to stay with their mother in the place they call home. I hope that the justices can see our humanity, our worth, and our contributions that we make to this country as the good Americans we are.
Hundreds of demonstrators gathered outside the courthouse on this gray, chilly morning to show their support for the Dreamers, immigrants, again, brought to the U.S. illegally or who overstayed as a visa as children.
This court should understand that this is a nation of immigrants and that all of us should uphold the beliefs and the values of our country, and that is that immigrants are here to stay. And we should protect, again, these 700,000 individuals who came here for opportunity, for education, and for freedom.
Trump, known for his hardline policies, announced plans in September of 2017 to phase out the program, but it was blocked by lower courts. AP correspondent Mark Sherman reports the only reference in the hearing on Tuesday to President Trump was made by Justice Sonia Sotomayor.
Trump essentially has promised the Dreamers that he would protect them, that they wouldn't have to worry but he hasn't done so, is what Sotomayor said. She also complained that the administration was hiding behind legal arguments when it should be taking ownership of the situation and saying plainly that it has decided to destroy people's lives, as she put it.
DACA, launched in 2012 by former President Barack Obama, provides roughly 661,000 such immigrants with deportation protection and work permits. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. Protests at the Chinese University of Hong Kong continued Tuesday night. Western hostages will be exchanged for the Haqqani leader. Germany donates millions to the United Nations food program to hard-hit areas in South Sudan, dealing with widespread flooding. And an FBI report finds that hate crimes in the U.S. dipped in 2018 after a three-year spike. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. President Donald Trump welcomes Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to the White House today, just weeks after Turkey launched an assault in Syria on Kurdish fighters, longtime allies of the United States in the fight against Islamic State terrorists. U.S. lawmakers from both parties have slammed the president for his announcement that he plans to withdraw most U.S. troops from Syria, and Democratic lawmakers are also blasting his invitation to Erdogan while Turkey continues its attacks on the Kurds. Dorian Jones brings us this report from Istanbul.
Turkey's military operation against the Syrian Kurdish militia is expected to top the agenda of talks between President Erdogan and President Trump. Ankara designates the militia terrorists, but the militia is a key ally in the U.S.-led war against the Islamic State. The U.S. Congress is threatening widespread sanctions against Turkey, some of which target Erdogan personally. This week's presidential meeting comes at a key moment in relations between the NATO allies.
There is a long list of problems between the two countries. In fact, the relationship has never been as bad as it is today. And of course, there is an ongoing matter, which is the Turkish incursion in Syria and U.S. objections. What's happening on the ground is still extremely volatile.
Despite escalating bilateral tensions, the two presidents appear to have built a good working relationship, a personal chemistry that Ankara believes can offer a chance of a reset.
The summit will be beneficial for the both sides. I'm looking the optimistic perspective. This will be bringing new solutions and new methodologies between the two actors.
But some analysts warn Ankara relying solely on Trump to resolve differences may be a risky strategy.
Huge strategic mistake on the part of Ankara was to build the entire relationship, to reduce it all on President Trump, one man, and basically his tweets. And that is a very risky proposition. I'd say that's a Russian roulette in a relationship that is almost more than a century old.
Erdogan is looking to Trump to lift an embargo on the purchase of America's latest fighter jet. Trump imposed a freeze after Ankara procured Russia's S-400 missiles. Washington is alarmed at Ankara's deepening ties with Moscow. Erdogan is expected to offer to buy America's Patriot missiles during his visit. But Ankara points out if this week's meeting with Trump doesn't deliver a reset in ties, Moscow is waiting.
Turkey cannot continue to have the productive alliance with the U.S. while these threats continue to exist. This is not beneficial. We are looking the other side. Who is the winner of this situation? Russia and China.
Already, Turkish and Russian troops are cooperating in Syria. Russian President Vladimir Putin continues to court Erdogan. Putin is likely to be watching Erdogan's visit to Washington closely. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Former President Jimmy Carter is recovering after surgery to relieve pressure on his brain, AP correspondent Walter Ratliff reports.
Former President Jimmy Carter is out of surgery. Jimmy Carter's spokeswoman says the former president is recovering at Emory University Hospital following surgery to relieve pressure from bleeding on his brain. Carter has fallen at least three times this year. The first incident, in the spring, required hip replacement surgery. He was briefly hospitalized after fracturing his pelvis 3 weeks ago. Carter candidly said he is at ease with his own mortality during a recent church appearance. After a dire cancer diagnosis in 2015, he said he prayed about having the proper attitude toward death. Since then, Carter said he's been absolutely confident in the Christian idea of life after death. I'm Walter Ratliff.
Well, for those who have removed all animal products out of their diet and making sure they're not wearing anything made from an animal, like fur shoes, seem like a natural progression. And in Los Angeles, California, vegan fashion is a thing, and retailers are doing their best to meet demand for cruelty-free clothing and footwear. One designer in California dedicated all her time and energy to making sneakers that are made from recycled materials and are fully recyclable themselves. Angelina Bogdasaryan has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Cynthia Arcus confesses that it was her son who inspired and pushed her to create her own business.
He was making so many questions, and one of them was like, why are we wasting resources? Why are we wasting so much water? So because of his questions, I was like, wow, yes, and how we could do things different.
Arcus decided she needed to start with herself. That's how the brand Arcus Bear was born, sneakers made of recycled material. The eco-friendly sneakers, though available in many colors, have never been dyed. They were just made from recycled material of similar color.
And dyeing colors, you know, you use water, you are using chemicals. So I was picking and balancing all of this. And we decided to do sustainable sneakers made of recycled rubber and recycled cotton and plastic bottles. Inside is very comfortable. It has coconut fiber.
Old footwear, disfigured and discolored, turns into designer shoes.
Those are pieces of rubber. Those are pieces of other soles that should be discarded. And we decide to reutilize in the production.
Arcus' sneakers shown at the Vegan Fashion Week that took place in Los Angeles early in October. Together with other designers, Arcus wants to prove that eco-friendly doesn't mean ugly. A lot of vegan clothing and shoe items are sold for hefty prices, and there are a whole variety of styles to choose from.
I was a stylist to celebrities, right? So I was making up and outfits for people, and I was buying up to like $10,000 to $15,000 worth of amazing luxury shoes a month. And I wanted to find a way to make a version that was non-leather and not using any animal cruelty, but also having that same amazing feel, fit, and fashion sense. And so I went out to do it myself.
Rebecca Mink has been making designer vegan shoes for Hollywood celebrities for over 20 years. Apples, pineapples, mushrooms, the materials she uses will astonish any clothing guru. The shoes are manufactured in Italy and cost a fortune. But high price is something that a lot of vegan shoes share. These sneakers, for example, cost $200 a pair. But sustainability and eco-friendliness is in fashion, so the companies making such footwear are not complaining about the lack of customers.
The regular shoes companies, the sales like going down. For vegan shoes, it's going up. Because what they are made of is not a fashion, you know, just a trend.
For now, vegan shoes seem to be a US thing. European countries still like their leather. So most vegan designers are exclusive to the US, where they know they will find customers. For Angelina Bogdasaryan in Los Angeles, Anna Rice, VOA News.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA. Back in a minute.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.
On our voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about.
Sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick.
And Hadiza Kiari.
And Ayan Bior.
And Orion Itangi Shaka.
Join us on Facebook at VOA Our Voices.
It's time for Our Voices.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, there are lots of new movies coming out in theaters and several that debuted over the long holiday weekend in the U.S. Joining us now to talk about two of them is Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard. Midway, a clash between the American fleet and the Imperial Japanese Navy. Sounds like a pretty intense film there. I would imagine this is based on a true story, Jeff?
Of course it is. It's history. It's right in time for Veterans Day. And this is a movie that did so well on its opening weekend, and it surprised all the studios. And director Roland Emmerich, who's no stranger to these big-budget action films, he gave us movies like The Day After Tomorrow, Stargate, Independence Day. This is his big historical drama about the Battle of Midway, which was the quintessential battle that turned the tide of the World War II to the Allies. We were losing badly. And after Pearl Harbor, and we could not recover from all of the ships that we have lost, and the Japanese fleet didn't lose anything. So there were some really key battles, from the Battle of Coral Sea and then also the Battle of Midway, which our bombers and our planes and our ships were outnumbered vastly, but we, against incredible odds, we turned the tide of the war during that battle. And the movie starts with the Battle of the Pearl Harbor, because you can't understand the Battle of Midway without understanding the Battle of Pearl Harbor. So Roland Emmerich not only is making it historically accurate, but he's also, you know, it's a movie. You got to entertain people. So there's some cinematic license, and, you know, the dialogue and the incredible special effects with the computer-generated planes and dive bombers and ships. And he also built realistic sets as well. And you got some of the greatest talent in Hollywood who portray actual soldiers and sailors and pilots in the movie. They're not made-up characters. You know, like Dennis Quaid playing Admiral Halsey, or Woody Harrelson playing Admiral Nimitz, and also Ed Skeen, who's playing Dick Best, who was a decorated pilot who sank two carriers of the Japanese during the Battle of Midway. So not only is this an entertaining movie, but a historical movie, but it's an important battle for our history and for younger generations to understand exactly how important this battle was that turned the tide of the war, or we were speaking German and Japanese. So this was the number one movie of the weekend, and I'm glad to say that because I'm a history buff, and this was a phenomenal experience.
Okay, and then we've got Dr. Sleep. What's that all about? It sounds kind of like it could be a little bit scary.
It is. It is actually the sequel to The Shining from 1980. Stephen King wrote a sequel to the book a few years ago after someone asked him at a book fair, whatever happened to Danny Torrance, the little boy from The Shining? So he came up with a new story of where Danny Torrance is now. Played by Ewan McGregor, he has been haunted by all those ghosts from the original Overlook Hotel when he was a little boy, and has driven the drink, has driven the drugs, and he's a drifter. He encounters a little girl who's got the shine, you know, that power that they have. This little girl has the most powerful shine he's ever encountered. And there's a group of drifters called the Knot Gang who are looking for her too, because they want her essence. And that essence that she has, that shine, makes them immortal. And the whole movie ends with a great climax back at the Overlook Hotel. And the director, Mike Flanagan, went to the Stanley Kubrick estate, found all the original plans. They rebuilt the entire sets from the original Shining. So not only is this movie scary, not only is this movie just great for people who are fans of the original Shining, but the performances are out of this world. And I was terrified. I really was. It's been a long time since a movie gave me the creeps like this one.
All right, Jeff. I'll make sure I get there with someone who can hold my hand through that one. That's Jeffrey K. Howard. You can find all his video reviews at VegasFilmCritic.com. Thanks so much, Jeff.
My pleasure.
Well, a milestone anniversary for singer, songwriter, actress, and businesswoman Madonna. Her album, Like a Virgin, was released 35 years ago today. It became her first number one album in Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Spain, the UK, and the US. Like a Virgin also became the very first album by a woman to sell over 5 million copies in the United States. It was later certified diamond and has sold over 21 million copies worldwide. Madonna, who is known for pushing the boundaries of songwriting and mainstream popular music, has sparked controversy and also praised by other musical artists. Many of her songs have since reached the top of the record charts worldwide, including Like a Virgin, La Isla Bonita, Like a Prayer, Vogue, Take a Bow, Frozen, Music, Hung Up, In 4 Minutes, and many more. Madonna's look and style of dressing, her performances, and her music videos influenced young girls and women. Her style became one of the female fashion trends of the 1980s. Well, you've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us online at voanews.com. We thank you very much for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Calvin Fowler. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
An international public service announcement by the United States government.
The U.S. Department of State's Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $5 million for information on ISIS kidnapping networks or the people responsible for kidnapping 5 Christian clerics. Greek Orthodox priest Maher Mahfouz and Armenian Catholic priest Michael Kayal were on a public bus traveling to a monastery in Kafrun, Syria, on February 9, 2013, some 30 kilometers outside of Aleppo. Suspected ISIS extremists stopped the vehicle, checked passengers' documents, then removed the 2 priests from the bus. They have not been seen or heard from since. On April 22, 2013, Syrian Orthodox Archbishop Gregorios Ibrahim and Greek Orthodox Archbishop Boulos Izygia were ambushed in their vehicle by armed men at a checkpoint near Al-Mansoura, Syria. The cleric's driver was later found dead. Initially believed to have been kidnapped by persons aligned with the Al-Qaeda affiliate Jabhat al-Nusra Front, the archbishops were later transferred to ISIS. On July 29, 2013, ISIS abducted Italian Jesuit priest Paolo Dell'Olio in Raqqa. Father Dell'Olio had planned to meet with ISIS to ask for the release of Fathers Mahfouz and Kayal and Archbishops Ibrahim and Yazigi. He has not been seen or heard from since. The State Department declared that the kidnapping of religious leaders demonstrates ISIS's ruthless tactics and approval of targeting innocent individuals. It also noted that ISIS remains a significant threat to the United States, as well as our allies and partners throughout the Middle East and around the world. The United States will continue to support our partners in efforts to defeat this threat and deny ISIS safe haven anywhere. Since its inception in 1984, the Rewards for Justice program has paid in excess of $150 million to more than 100 people who provided actionable information that helped bring terrorists to justice or prevented acts of international terrorism worldwide. If you have information on ISIS kidnapping networks or on the people responsible for kidnapping Christian clerics, please contact the Rewards for Justice website at www.rewardsforjustice.net, email info@rewardsforjustice.net, or contact the regional security officer at the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.
This is VOA News.